Hey, what's happening, everybody? Thanks for stopping into Tech Talk Live tonight, right here with Captain Ron, hanging out right down here, myself, the Rust Belt Mechanic, and guest starring tonight, we have Mr. McBake. The McBake.
Noodles.
How are we doing tonight, guys?
Doing good.
Doing good, man.
Yeah, enjoying your nice weekend extension of the holidays?
Oh, yeah.
Is it really an extension when we have to work one day in between it?
I mean, the Friday was kind of a depressing day. I don't know if any of you guys in the audience have had to work on that Friday after Thanksgiving, how much of a soul-wrenching, depressing day that is, especially when like three-fourths of your rest of your immediate family is all off work that day. Oh, yeah, it's another paid holiday. We just love it. It's awesome. We're going shopping. We're going to go have lunch. We're going to go to have some coffee. You should come on your lunch break. No.
Nope.
It's already depressing enough how it is. Thank you for the offer. Go enjoy your fluff day.
Exactly.
Right. No kidding.
I mean, the big plus of it is it was Black Friday, and us as tool guys, we get to enjoy the Black Friday goodness too, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And that is one of the other things that we are going to be talking about tonight is some of the cool deals that we did get for our Black Friday. So we'll be talking about that here in a little bit. But one of the main things that I really wanted to focus around tonight is for new technicians, because having two new technicians here, McBake and the Captain, you guys have channels that focus on things around newer technicians getting started into the automotive field. I kind of wanted to get the focal point around that one. Just looking, we've got quite a few people rolling in tonight. Andy, Nathan, Just Wrench It, Faster Than You, Kyle K, Matt Collins, Corey Suttles. What's up, guys? Thank you for tuning in tonight. All righty then. So, for the guys who have not tuned in to the channel, oh, look, there's Truckmaster in here too. What's up, buddy?
Who invited that guy?
There's that Truckmaster guy. So, if you guys have not been on the channel or have not seen the two that are here, both of these guys are guys who work in the shop with me at the dealership. You guys obviously know Captain Ron. He's been a part of the channel for going on a year and a half now. And then McBake got started into the shop about, what, month and a half ago?
About a month and a half now.
Right around there, and he started his own YouTube channel too. So after this whole thing, I'm going to be putting links in the description to both of their channels as well. If not, I'm sure you can find it. McBake, that one's super easy to find, and Captain Ron, his channel is The Master Apprentice. So make sure you guys keep them in mind to go check their channels out. But introducing into the newer item is McBake. So I want to hear a little about you, McBake, where you got started before coming to the dealership and kind of what led you to working there.
So I guess just as a kid, like most teenagers, I was obsessed with cars. I bought my first car when I was 15. It was a 95 Ford Tempo. I mean, worked on that, gave it a paint job, all that kind of stuff before I could even drive. Always been into cars, but never much of a school guy, so I didn't want to go to school to be a mechanic. I didn't want to take any extra schooling. So saying that, I've always been pretty good with sales, so I've always had a sales position like my entire working life. I was a telemarketer. I worked at PacSun. I was a manager of GameStop for, I think, like 9 or 10 years. And then I was a personal banker for a little more than a year. A personal banker, financial advisor, anything like that. And in that role, that is when I started realizing that being in sales, working at a desk, it was pretty soul crushing, honestly. I mean, I was never going home in a good mood. I was always kind of down in the dumps, kind of depressed. So
you always looked like you were in a pissy mood whenever I walked by you, whenever you're outside.
I'm not gonna lie, it kind of was like that.
I probably was in a pissy mood.
I walk by, I'm like, "What's up, Baker?" You're like, "Hey,
what up?"
What's up?
And so, going from the personal banker to car sales was kind of me making a transition more towards cars, because it was kind of like just trying to find out, trying to make my career something I enjoy. So I was working car sales for a while. And as I was doing that, I mean, I would always wander back to the shop, obviously, talk to Rust Belt, talk to Ron, go back there, talk about tools, recommendations. I remember me and Rust Belt, we really started talking back when he was doing that pneumatic SP impact giveaway. And that's when I was kind of, yeah, I'd love to have that. I just have this old crappy central pneumatic impact. And that's when me and him like started talking tools. And then finally, there was a position that opened up back in the shop. Rust Belt came to me talking, yeah, just do this. But it was...
It's just this easy. Like, it was just super simple. Just go talk. Just go talk to him. That's all you had to do.
I'm pretty sure I told you the same thing.
Yeah, you did as well. I think, actually, our service rider did as well. Because just being there for the past year, they all kind of knew that I liked working on cars. But it was a pay cut. And so it was always kind of like a... Do I? Should I? And
now,
luckily,
now, when you're talking pay cut, how are you talking pay cut compared to hours wise? Because I know hours wise, it kind of sucked a lot up front too.
It did. I mean, hours, you know, you're there all day, every day. But if you're halfway decent, you're going to make good money as a car salesman because you get the commissions. And I don't know how much I should share, but after being in car sales for 6 months there, they moved me to commercial car sales, which was even more money, which was nice. But anyway, then my wife took on a new job and she started bringing in some more money. And that is what made my decision for me. Hey, as a family, we can now afford for me to do this. So let's do it.
Now, how old are you guys? The guys are asking.
Oh, I'm sorry. How old am I? I'm 31 and my wife is 30.
31. So he is not the spring chicken. He's not one of the 20-year-olds coming fresh into the field, Mr. Green Street or anything like that. He's had some rings under his belt, you know, going through other things. And as you guys were hearing from his other careers that he was kind of trying to swimming through the soul-wrenching side of industry banking.
Yeah, it was rough.
I'm sure all those office hours put a few extra lives on you as well. So a few extra years on you, I should say. Because, I mean, just working in any sort of, like, office setting just seems to, like, want to drain you.
I mean, yeah. Captain, you sat in an office setting too before, didn't you?
Yep. Way before I was a mechanic and way before I was a cable tech, I was a civil engineer. So I sat in a cubicle, stared at a computer for 8+ hours doing CAD drafting, which was
depression.
Yeah. I couldn't decorate my cubicle enough to make me happy. Like I kept putting all kinds of cool stuff in there for me. And it's like, I'm still in a box. I'm in a glass case. I'm in a glass case of emotion.
I was allowed two personal items on my bank desk, and one of those items was a Mario amiibo, and the bank manager wouldn't let me keep it on my desk because it was too childish.
Oh, whatever. Yeah.
Were you required to have pieces of flair as well?
They say that you can have two personal items, your own personal pieces of flair, but really they discouraged it. Every time it would be something, they'd be like, is that appropriate, Michael?
Yeah.
Do you think somebody will take you serious with a Mario on your desk? It's like, I don't give a shit.
Eris says, iconic part is a cubicle is smaller than a prison cell, which they both are pretty much the same exact thing. You're confined to that little space of yours and you got to work in it.
Yeah,
that just plain sucks. We got a couple of different questions in here. Dirt Rider asks about new techs. What's the closest differences in standard and metric sockets? What sizes are close? To my question on that one, who uses standard sockets still?
Yeah, I was going to say nothing's
close. I'm pretty sure all my standard sockets are still brand new and shiny because I've only used one, and that's a quarter inch.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty much it. And Dewey did it ask on how often we see the JK Wranglers get declined for bad motor with oil pressure issues happening from playing in the mud. Now, oddly enough, our dealership, we sell lots of Jeeps. I know you guys see it, and it's everything from baseline JK Wranglers that go for like $8,000-$9,000 all the way up to $65,000, $70,000 Rocky Ridge built full cage Jeeps that are just badass. I have not seen one single Jeep that was made for off-roading be a hardcore rock crawling off-roader and come in for any warranty issues or warranty work at all.
Nope.
I mean, if they do, if they do, they're not bringing it into the dealership for warranty items usually.
Nope.
When I was taking my sales classes, there was like a statistic that 85% of Jeep owners will never take their Jeep Wrangler off-road.
Nope.
How depressing is that?
And the people who are buying the Rocky Ridge upfits, they definitely are not doing that.
Mall crawlers.
Exactly.
Yeah, that definitely sucks to see, especially when they're spending so much money on these. And you know that how easily that these Jeeps could be built for so much less money. But the fact that they are able to carry more of an extension of the factory warranty is, you know.
Nice.
A good selling point to it.
Oh, yeah.
Cheyenne Albrington asks, is UTI a good school to go to? I'll be going to there free because of the military.
I'm pretty sure any school is good if it's free.
Faux free is always great because education these days, it's quite expensive. Even the cheapest tuition in the state of Ohio, which where we are at, was from Sinclair Community College. If you are in network, like in the county, it's like $10,000 to go there for the 2 years. If you're out of the county, but you're still in the state of Ohio, it's like $12,500-$13,000. If you're out of state, it's like $16,000 to $18,000.
$18,000.
Mm-hmm.
I know that for a fact. It's 18.
Yep. It was kind of rough there. So free education is great. I just know that UTI right off the bat has a is pretty notorious for being way overpriced for what they give. I know a lot of guys who have went there and said they have had great experience there, but they kind of push you towards more performance things and give you more, I guess, line items like, hey, we have NASCAR acceptance programs. We can put you into drag racing teams. And yeah, not so often, but they do have standard programs that are pretty good from what I've seen, but they are quite a bit more expensive. It's at least twice as much.
It's crazy.
Alrighty. So next topic in the lineup for tonight. I know, like I said, you guys both have not gotten started into this industry in, you know, your fresh days of your 20s, but you have started into your 30s, getting started into the automotive field. Do you think, in your opinion, there is a point at which it is too old or too far in one's lifetime to get started into the automotive field, and why? We're going to start with the captain.
I say that to that question, it really depends on the person. If you are 30 years old, 40 years old, 50 years old, 60 years old even, if a lot of it's going to come down to the fact of whether or not if you are older, say like your 50s or 60s, if your body can handle it. That's going to be the biggest thing. But if you if your body can handle it, you can mentally handle it, and you know, and you want to learn all the time and you want to get everything that you can in your head and under your belt, then no, I don't think there is a quote unquote too late of age to pick this up and go with it. I mean, if you're going to be older, you're going to be thinking about this is going to be if you're 40 or 50 or 60 years old and you're starting a career in this, you got to keep in mind that that career is probably not going to be very long because you're going to get to the point where you just can't do it anymore or you just don't want to do it anymore. But if you're, you know, 30 or 40 years old, no, you can hop right in and you can learn. I mean, I'm a good case scenario for that. I started doing this when I was 35, I think it was. I've been doing it for 3 years now.
Right.
So So yeah, I mean, 35 years old, jumped into this without knowing. I knew how to put air in tires. I knew how to do an oil change. I knew how to do a few little other things, and that's really about it. I didn't know anything else. And now that I've been doing it for 3 years, I feel pretty confident in the fact that I can do pretty much anything that's handed to me as long as I've got instructions.
There we go. So how about you, McBake? What are you thinking?
I think you should never let anybody tell you it's too late to do anything.
Hardline man. Why is that?
Yeah, I wish I had a longer answer, but do whatever you want whenever you want. I mean, it's never too late to do anything. It's attitudes like that, oh, it's too late for me to do it. That's just a bad attitude to have. But, I mean, I'll be honest, career change it's intimidating. Like I said, I've been in sales since my professional life. It's always been in sales, whether it's telemarketing, on the floor, manager, whatever. And one of the big things, I think I told Ron the first day I was back in the shop, I watched one of his videos about being a tech, and he went into the fact that he was 32 or 33 at the time and making the career change. And it was like right after that video, I was like, well, yeah, let's do it. He did it, and look at him. I'm going to do it too. I'm not too old.
I can definitely see that one. And those are all really good points. However, I'm going to bring a veil of reality down on here. And I'm going to bring a couple of points out just to kind of stir upon in the chat to this one in seeing newer techs getting started into the field. Now, guys who are coming from, like what McBake has come from, your family was into cars your whole life, so you have a general knowledge in what you're getting into.
Yeah.
And Ron, you're a technical guy. You like the computers, and 95% of vehicles are, what, wiring in computers, right? Yep. So it was pretty easy to get into the basics of the automotive field. Now, for the guys who are coming from, I don't know, say, veterinary school, and they say, you know what, I want to learn how to work on my car and I want to make that a profession, it's going to be a little bit on the harder side. And the biggest trip up that you are obviously going to have is the financial portion of it. You have to think about what the startup cost of being an automotive mechanic is going to cost you. If you're one of the guys who doesn't have even a basic toolbox inside of your garage, if you're the one who's taking your car to a mechanic every single time for an oil change, it's going to be pretty pricey to be able to start things off with. I've seen the guys be able to go in through it, even buying, if you go to school, buying the starter sets through one of the big three, Snap-on, Mac, Matco. They're obviously pretty costly, even as a newer tech. And then there's other guys like McBake who went for the thrifty side of things. And even when you get into the thrifty side of things, you're still going to be putting between $2,500 and $3,000 into a beginner's tool set. Now, that's obviously not doing just oil changes. If you're doing just oil changes, I'm pretty sure you could get by with a cheap, quick $500 in and out used and be okay. But if you're actually planning on being a real technician and getting into starting on actual fixes on suspension, electrical, doing little tires and other fixes inside of a vehicle, you need electric tools, pneumatic tools, then you're probably looking at between, I'd say, $3,000 or so to be able to even get started. So if you don't have that financial ability to get things started, then it's going to be really, really rough starting for you. Credit's another thing that you're going to have to be worried about, because if you can't afford that, you're going to have to put something on credit, which is not always a great thing. I don't recommend that very often unless you really need it to get started. Just one of those other things to think about.
I like Michigan credit. Go on, Ron.
I was going to say, Michigan Mechanics says, if you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball. Or if you can fix a cat, you can probably at least change your oil.
If you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball.
So I don't think credit is necessarily a bad thing that needs to be avoided. You just have to do it the smart way. Don't just go rushing
that's
in.
That's the key, though. How many guys can have that mentality on, say, you know what? Yes, I have a $5,000 credit limit, but I am going to keep my credit line down to $1,000.
Not even that. I mean, any career change is going to cost you money. My wife became an infant swim instructor. It cost us $8,000 in getting her certified, stuff like that. And if you're serious about it and it it's nerve-wracking, the financial end, go to the bank, go to a bank that you bank with, and just request to sit down with a financial advisor or a personal banker. They will help you figure it out. I mean, it's at like 80% of chain banks or even regional banks, a financial advisor is going to be a free meeting. Like, they seriously, they push you to sit with a financial advisor. And they're smart people. I'm not saying that because I was there. Well, maybe I am, because I know the information that I've helped people with.
No, that's a very, very smart thing to be able to get a hold of somebody that does that.
Yeah, and 90% of banks, if you bank at Chase, at PNC, Fifth Third, any of these banks, they will have a free financial advisor for you. I guarantee it.
And so what Baker is saying is that if you can't manage your money, get somebody to manage your money for you.
If you're looking at a big investment coming up, like in tools or anything, just talk to somebody. I mean, they have the services
there. Yeah,
the free
financial advisor, or even if you're looking at somebody that's a financial advisor for a tax preparation firm, somebody that you're willing to pay for your tax preparation or to talk to him ahead of time before you get into that point is something that is well worth the extra money spent on it because of a couple of other factors when you're getting into the automotive field. The U.S. tax code is, for one thing, has changed a bunch over the last year and a half to 2 years. You guys, as independent technicians that do not own your own building that you work in, you don't own the business or anything like that, did you know that you can no longer claim the tools that you purchase for work under your taxes? Yes, I do know they doubled the exemptions, and it's a little bit harder, so you have to obviously spend a lot more money and tools to be able to meet the exemption status, but you cannot claim that amount. But there are a couple of other loopholes, and that's where talking to a financial advisor would be amazing, because if you start up your own LLC that is to do with, like, okay, I'm going to start up a YouTube channel and I'm going to put it under this LLC and I'm going to videotape all of my tools. Look at that. Every single tool I bought this year, covered under taxes. How about that one?
And there's the reason. There's the reason why Kyle does YouTube.
I mean, you got to be able to write that stuff off somehow. You guys see how much money I spend a year in tools and everything alone, dude. It's a lot. It really is. And if you couldn't claim that's a lot you're missing out on. In some states, you still can. Very few of them, though. They changed it on the federal tax bracket. Some states, you can still claim them via your state taxes, but not very many of the channels can you put that down anymore.
I mean, you used to be able to do that here in Ohio, correct?
Yes. That is.
Yeah, I didn't know it changed. Mm-hmm. Until you told me, like, my first month working or first couple of weeks.
How to Automotive just said, that's why I do YouTube.
Speaking of other guys that have come into here, let's get a new kind of little update. We've got Brian from How to Automotive, CP the Tool Addict. He's got a great channel as well. Zaphael, Cali Auto Tech, awesome. Dewey Did It, he's got a YouTube channel. I know I saw Everyday Fleet Tech in here, Captain Salty himself. Good seeing you in here tonight, Chad. Appreciate everyone coming in to the chat this evening. Kind of they're throwing their 2 cents around. All right, so we've got into the new tech, starting off as, you know, into the older side of things. Obviously, from what we've been talking about, getting started in the automotive industry as a guy who is a little bit on the older side, not 20 years old, is a little bit harder. And is, if you were 20 years old, still living with your parents, it would be a whole lot easier to get started into these things. Am I right?
Oh, yeah. That'd be nice.
Oh, yeah. Whole lot easier. Now, is there any recommendations that you guys can give newer technicians coming into the field on, I guess, what to do, what to stay away from, what made it easier to transition from your old job to your new job? What were you most worried about? Maybe some of those kind of things. We'll start with Mr. Baker.
I'm the wrong guy to start with.
Wait, I'm sorry, Mr. Indecisive here. Captain Ron, you going to cover him on the fly?
I'll cover them on the fly.
Thanks, Ron.
Yeah. But you're gonna have to give me the question again.
Okay. So
I'm reading chat and other stuff, so I was kind of half paying attention, to be entirely honest.
Giving new technicians a little bit of advice when you're switching from another career to the automotive career. Obviously, it's easier for younger technicians to get started into the field. What kind of advice would you give for the guys who are coming from other big-time careers wanting to get started into the automotive? What things to look out for, what things to do, what not to do, and what things you were worried about in switching over?
Okay, so the first thing that I would say, because this is coming from my personal experience, coming from being a cable technician going into a mechanics world, do not be afraid to learn, because you're going to go into this and you may go into it thinking, hey, I know how to do some of this stuff, but whether you're doing it right or not is irrelevant. You need to be able to learn. You need to, if you're put with a guy and you're being mentored by a guy, even if it's this guy right here, you got to learn, you got to listen, you got to take his advice, and you got to take his judgy eyes. Baker knows what I'm talking about.
No, come on. Come on now.
Every day, at least once.
But yeah, you've got to be open to listen, and you got to be open to learn. You're always going to be learning new stuff. You're always going to be learning new things. There's always going to be changes that you're going to have to learn in the entire mechanics world. It's one thing I've learned about being a mechanic is that, and this is no pun, it's fluid, because things are actually moving. Things are changing. Things are upgrading. Things are downgrading. Things are always, always different, it seems like, week from week. So you got to be on top of your stuff. You got to be on top of everything else. One of the big things that I was worried about was honestly going to flat rate, because I knew going into being a mechanic, I was going to be an hourly tech. And that was to help me learn. I didn't have to worry about making things out on certain times. I could take my time. I could learn. I could diagnose properly. I could do everything. You know, not that I don't when I'm doing flat rate, but you know, you have that little bit of leeway to where you can actually hone your skills, and for lack of better terms. And I knew eventually once I got done with school, I'd be going into flat rate and I'd be on my own taking care of that. And to be honest, the first couple of weeks, the first month of being flat rate was kind of scary. I was worried about whether or not I was going to have enough work. I was worried about whether or not I was going to have enough time to get everything done, or if I was going to get stuff done efficiently enough to actually make the amount of hours that I want to make. And when I first started in school and I looked at flat rate, I was like, holy crap, how the hell am I going to do this? Now that I'm out of school and I'm actually doing it, it's not so bad to where I'm like, holy crap, how am I going to make 40 hours? But I find myself planning. I find myself working a little bit quicker. I find myself, you know, doing better research to where I can find ways to do what may be a 3-hour job in an hour to make up that extra time. So there's always going to be shortcuts. There's always going to be ways to make up your time. So don't worry about being a flat rate technician initially, because eventually you will make up that time and it will actually be okay.
Excellent points. McBake, you get you a couple lines in there.
Your turn, Baker.
Yeah. I mean, no, Ron covered it really well. If you're going into becoming a technician, go into it. And the biggest thing is you have to love what you do. I mean, you have to love cars, which I'm sure most of us do. It's the people who don't love cars that just see it as a job that do shoddy work. I mean, people's lives are in your hands, you know? So you really have to love what you do. You have to love the vehicle. You have to care for every vehicle like it's your own, more so than your own. I'll cut corners on my vehicle. I don't want to cut corners on a customer's vehicle. And anytime I do a job, if it's big, the small ones, oil changes, okay. I mean, double check all your work. Always go through it in your head. But any job that's a little more time consuming, get some extra eyes on it. I would say don't be scared to ask for help. Don't be scared to ask someone to check over your work, because it's what we do on vehicles is very important. If you don't do something just right, I mean, a lot of damage can be done to the vehicle or the drivers. just understand that there's a lot of things in your hands. Don't be scared to ask for help. Don't rush. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. No, those are all really great points. Asking questions is not a bad thing. And you can never ask too many questions.
And
you might seem that way.
Do not buy a parts cannon.
One of those giant parts cannons. Yes, don't do that.
A parts cannon.
You don't even need to worry about that.
We're not telling you about it. Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about the parts cannon.
Okay.
All right. No, asking questions is great off of that one. Finding somebody to follow through with. I know not every single shop is going to give you that opportunity to go into training behind a more experienced technician. So there's always going to be opportunities for you to go around the shop, kind of paying attention to other people. Online training sources for a lot of the guys who are in dealerships, there's never a dull moment that you can't be learning something. Always be learning something. The automotive industry itself is evolving and changing so much on a daily basis that you really can't ever stop learning. Otherwise, you fall way behind in what you're doing. It's always evolving, and you always have to keep up with these kind of things. All great points. Love that one. Kind of a mid-break point here for everybody. I wanted to remind everybody here in chat that everything here tonight is going to be put onto a podcast format. Captain Ron, where are these going to be posted at afterwards?
Well, once we get done with the podcast, usually within the next day, I upload everything to a website called anchor.fm. From there, I fill out all the information for the podcast, and it gets sent up and gets distributed through other podcast means, whether it be Spotify, whether it be Apple Podcasts, Google Play Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn. There's like two or three other ones. But you can find us across the board, with the exception of a couple places, because they just haven't been picked up there yet. But Monday or so, I have the new episode up to where if you guys don't get a chance to catch us on the live stream here on Sunday nights, you can listen to us throughout the week while you're fixing them cars. And listen to our voice in your ear.
Awesome. So everybody here, also don't forget to hit that thumbs up button if you haven't already. That always helps out, helps us to know what we're doing is on the correct track and what you guys like to be seeing in these kind of live streams. All right, next point on topic, we're going to be talking about some of the tools that we purchased this last week. Because Black Friday, yo, everybody got some great tool deals. We were all on the tool trucks and everything. We were all in those fancy tool stores. What kind of cool deals did you guys come out with this week? McBake?
Not a lot. Not so much on Black Friday. I picked up a Milwaukee Bit Driver.
Drill bits.
Thank you, Ron. other than that, I mean, I picked up a GoPro. I picked up some t-shirts that was on Black Friday.
All great things. Offline. All great things.
T-shirts from VinWiki. I don't know how you feel about plugging other YouTube channels. Go check out VinWiki if you love cars. It's my favorite. But then, like, as far as holiday sales, you can actually check out a video that I made, Thrifty Tools. There's three items on there that I picked up at Home Depot. Awesome deals on them. Check that video out. I'm really proud of that video.
Now, Thrifty Tools of the Week. That's going to be a pretty sweet little thing that I'm going to be doing a playoff of this next week on top of that for my Nifty Tools of the Week video coming up this next week on Tuesday.
I won't lie. My favorite part of that video was the first 30 seconds.
Right. It was very enjoyable locking him out. Mm-hmm. If you don't know what we're talking about, go watch it.
Yep. Everyday Fleet Tech asked us, how often do you get a vehicle that another shop diagnosed and you have to put everything back together? Now, not very often do we get the vehicles that were diagnosed and left apart for that amount. There are some vehicles that customers look at and leave in pieces for us to try to figure out. However, in those circumstances, we do not put them back together. If we didn't take it apart, we don't put it back together. No ifs, ands, or buts, because 98% of the time, there is always going to be something missing out of that entire stupid mix-up. people are dumb in general. They do not know how mechanics work on things. They don't keep bolts and nuts and screws organized how we would like to have them sorted, and they get lost under seats and everything. So we don't do that one. Diagnostics, however, I mean, you guys in general, you have even seen that over the last couple of weeks where we get cars that, oh yeah, hey, this one was worked at this other dealership this last week. They're complaining about this now.
Yep. Right. We've seen that several times over the last couple of weeks, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. I had one this last week. Ram 3500 had a drag link recall done at another local dealership 2 weeks prior to, and they're complaining that their left front tire was wearing very, very oddly. Sure enough, in that recall, you're supposed to do a full alignment check, and then you're supposed to weld the jam nuts onto the drag link to keep them from separating, because they have issues with the threads separating, rusting, all that stuff. So first off, they didn't do an alignment because this thing was way off. Secondly, their version of welding the nuts to the drag link, I'm pretty sure I could have taken a screwdriver and a hammer and hit it once or twice and those welds would have fallen off.
The funny thing you say that is that 2 weeks prior to that, I had a 3500 that had a drag link issue that was out of alignment from the same dealership.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's rough to be able to do that one. I mean, I don't like throwing guys under the bus a whole lot, especially other dealerships, but there's just a point at which, you know what? You got to call out BS when you see the BS. You know, you can't go to these customers trying to feed them lines of crap that another dealership may or may not have tried to see them do. It's always better to be able to put out the truth, what you see in these things. You can't go throwing everyone under the bus, though, in assumption that they cut corners or did something wrong, but be as honest as you can with
the work. Hold on. Cali Auto Tech just says, I've seen someone duct tape the jam nuts.
Wow. Just wow. I mean, in a pinch?
I don't...
No.
Apparently, they're getting a different version of the recall in California than what we are.
Uh-huh. Nathan Colmo asks, how do you guys deal with customers that constantly want to argue with you about a problem with their car? Well, I would have to say is I'm not a service writer, so I don't deal with customers. End of topic. Simple enough.
You say that.
No, but I have to every once in a while because I am the shop foreman, and thankfully the service manager and the service writer in our dealerships, they are smart enough to not put me into a vehicle with a customer if they don't want me to tell them the full 100%, whether it be a slap in the face or not, open, honest opinion of what their car is doing or what they think their car is doing. If they've got this mystery noise in their car and I go for a test drive and it's the transmission shifting from second to third gear, oh, my Mercedes didn't do that before. Well, you could go back to your $95,000 Mercedes and, you know, give away your $38,000 Jeep Cherokee, because you're not going to have the same experience in these vehicles. So yep. Thankfully, I don't have to deal with that very often. However, I am not a service manager or service writer, so I do not have to be as, I guess, soft on the customers as really need be.
Andy Osterson asked, how many places have a welder? And to be honest, with the specific recall that we are talking about, if it is a Chrysler dealership and they want to be able to do that recall, they have to own one.
Mm-hmm. They are required to have a certain one that works. It has to be at least a 220, 90 amp minimum welder for doing these jobs.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let's talk about our big project here going on, or our big line of discussion that I have kind of listed here. So
you didn't ask me what kind of tools I picked up.
Captain, I'm sorry, I forgot. What kind of tools did you pick up this week, Captain?
None.
Oh. I didn't want to make him feel bad.
I picked up my wallet and I felt how light it was, so I didn't go.
I tried not to go. And then
I forgot to say what I bought too. I did. I sent him to Home Depot because he had to get a socket, and that just started it right there.
Well, somebody actually asked in the chat if that was you that they saw at Home Depot on Friday.
Yep.
Can't remember who it was that asked that. But
yeah, I messaged back in the chat.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Either that or brother. I was there too on Friday. I was there in the morning at 6 a.m.
I wasn't.
Yep, I was there at 6 a.m. Friday morning. I've picked up a couple of pretty good deals. a couple of my batteries here at home, I know, and for some reason, Shock Agilis is not here in the chat to hate me on my Ryobi stuff.
Give it time. I'm sure he'll show
I went
up.
Back in through and I got me some new Ryobi batteries, and they had a deal where if you buy two of the batteries with the charger, you got a free tool. So I ended up picking up one of the battery powered Dremel assemblies. There he is. He comes in reminding me how trashy Ryobi is. Thank you for that reminder, Shaka. I missed you. I really did.
I knew he had to be lurking somewhere.
I hadn't seen him comment in there yet, so he's there. $2 just to say how trashy Ryobi is. But I had to get that one. Then I also had to pick up two more M12 3 and 4 amp hour batteries for my Milwaukee stuff. And they had a really killer deal on ratchet straps. I've got a new project coming up in the spring that I need some really large ratchet straps for. So I don't know if that's a little hint to what we might be working on, but I picked up some extra large ratchet straps. They had those on sale for like $8 or $9. Pretty sweet deal, I'd have to say.
And is it mm-hmm. good
deal? Yeah, Milwaukee. See, Shaka, he can't bang on the Milwaukee. Can't hate on that one.
Rigid. I'm a Rigid fan.
What about Rigid?
Just kick this bum out of here.
Right?
Nah. Well, anyways, since we got back out of that one, one of the main topics that I did want to bring up tonight for everybody to be able to chat about was the fact of, since you got into the automotive field, now you are professionally, I guess we'll throw the quotes in there, professionally working on everybody else's cars. That means you're getting paid to work on other people's cars that come into the dealership. Do you find it hard coming into the field now to be able to work on your own vehicle, finding time or finding even the drive to want to work on your own vehicle after starting this? McBeg?
No. I still love working on my car. I like a car with projects. Just today I was out on the garage just tinkering around. Didn't do anything major. I shaved the badges off my car, gave it a good detail, things like that. But therefore, like three Saturdays in a row, I had my own personal car in the shop working on it. And I know I've only been doing it professionally for a month and a half, but no, it makes me want to work on my car even more.
Okay. But again, so there's I just love cars. There's the perspective of a month and a half into professional work. Now let's go 2.5 years into professional work. Captain Ron, what are you thinking?
Did you ever work on your own cars to begin with?
Did I work on my own cars to begin with?
Yes, yeah. You did. You had
did
to.
You? Yeah. I had the Kia. When I had my Kia, I had it out in the driveway, and mm-hmm. I replaced speakers in it because I needed to replace speakers in it.
Yeah,
I was out there doing that, soldering new stuff into it. And even when I got the dirty old Max, I mean, I had that in working on it all the time. Hell, it had to be worked on before I could even drive it. So
right,
I definitely worked on it. But now that I work on them all day long, and I come home, and it's like. Like right now, I've got a blower motor issue. My heat kicks on and off from time to time, and I'm like,
and how long has it been doing that?
At least a couple weeks.
Not cool, Ron.
And I'm like, I need to work on it. And then by the time I get home, I'm just like, I don't know if I can work on it right now.
Or even weekend time.
Weekend time, I'm still at the shop working on other shit. So I don't even know what weekends are anymore.
Most people say it'll change, but I don't think I'll ever get sick of working my own cars.
I don't think
you'll get sick of it. However, I think that you will find the time restraint is going to change because you will find a difference in how your time is delegated, in what importance you find your time put to other things. Fixing your own car, since you're not getting paid to work on your own car, is going to find that. I'm not going to say, because I enjoy working on my Duramax. Working on it. I think it's fun as hell. When I had that cab off doing everything in the engine, that was amazing. But finding the time to actually, you know, put it into the correct line of order in which it really needed to be worked on faster than that, that was hard for me.
My car takes priority over my wife. Always been that way. I'm just kidding.
You know this is recorded and also double broadcasted, right? Just saying.
We're going to see her busting through that door in the background. Now listen here, Mike. What did you just say?
You want to sleep in the garage? That's how you sleep in the garage.
I would love to sleep in the garage.
Now me, when I started off in the automotive field, I was also a major car guy. I had a 2005 Dodge Magnum Hemi RT all-wheel drive, beast of a car. I had a 1972 AMC AMX with 360 727 trans. It was pretty badass. Had side pipes, everything. So I had that one. And I've had a couple of other ones here and there, but starting off in the industry, those are what I had, and I loved working on cars. I would bring them specifically into work and begged old Ralph to stay after a lot of days. Like, hey, can I put this up on the rack just so I can check this or do that? Can you help me figure this one out? Because I didn't know my MX had an issue with a charging system when I first had it. And, you know, I finally begged him enough times to be able to bring it in and figure out what was wrong with it in the shop. It was pretty cool. But I would have to say probably about 2 years, 2 to 2.5 years into working professionally in the shop, did I find it more of an issue to find time to work or to want to find time to work on my own vehicles. I always have to do the best job that I possibly can. So when I bring my vehicles in here, I am not going to give them any kind of shortcuts as compared to the customer's vehicles that I'm working on. I'm going to go through every single part of the checklist just as I normally would, pull every single filter, all the same checklist. I don't want my wife forgetting to remind me to do the oil change. So the oil change sticker goes in there, the reset light gets put through, and I check everything that I possibly can because I don't want to have that thought in the back of my head just looming there that something got missed. So I put it through the whole ringer, but I try nowadays to put things off a little bit more and a little bit more than I had prior to in the past. So it's just one of those time delegation kind of things. It sucks. I really want to be able to do my stuff, but time is money, and I make more money working on other people's stuff.
Yep.
You know, one of those kind of things.
You can make more money working on your own car,
too. I could if my name was on the shop and on all, you know.
No, when you go to sell that car.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've done flips, though. I haven't done a whole bunch of buying and selling and stuff over the last 2 years. Surprisingly, I started YouTube and I'm like, wow, that stuff will be great. I'll be able to do buy and sell, flip and stuff. It'll make some really great content. Yeah, I haven't done that.
I get in those vicious cycles where I'll buy a car, I'll put some work into it, and then I'll get a different car, and I just keep going until I find one I like. Like, I probably had 3 SUVs within a year by the time I found my Commander, and then I stuck with that one for a while, and now I'm in that vicious cycle again. I had a Saturn Aura, I went to a Cadillac CTS, now I'm on a Mitsubishi Lancer, and I'm ready looking for something else.
Be nice to have that kind of expendable income.
You don't have to. It's not that far off.
No.
I mean, you're not talking about $5,000 you're throwing around here and there. I mean, you're like throwing $2,000 and then I got to sell this to buy another one.
Yeah. I mean, all in all, maybe like $4,000 that gets shifted from one car to the next.
Mm-hmm. It's been a long Brian from How To Automotive said he started off with a 65 Corvair.
I love Corvairs, man.
You obviously never worked on them.
Obviously. I haven't. I can only imagine how bad that flat six would be. But
yeah,
it's just so unique.
It's a little on the rough side, and parts. Dude, getting parts for those Corvairs just sucked. My grandpa had one.
I think it'd be fun to have a project car eventually, but we got to have room for a project car before you do anything.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the best part of my wife getting a nice car. Now I can have the junk. Sorry, go on.
No, that I totally get that one. My wife has always driven the nice car, so I didn't really have to worry about those things.
Yeah.
That's been nice. What's up, Maintenance Man? Maintenance Man has come into the chat here. Great channel also. Make sure to go check him out.
King of the live stream.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what's next on the
go ahead.
I was going to say, what's next on the agenda there, Mr. Belt?
I want to hear how the Dirty Max is going. You hardly talk about it. Did you get that new backup camera in yet?
No. I literally have not had time to do anything like that. And honestly, I mean, I was doing the backup camera video before on the wireless one, and I did that when it was actually decent outside. Now it's so cold outside, it's hard to do anything outside.
I do keep forgetting you guys don't have garage space to work in.
No, I do not have a garage space. So, if I'm doing anything like that, it's got to be in the shop, and I've got to take time out of my evening to do that at the shop, away from the house. So it makes it a little difficult for me to do it. But I do have backup cameras I need to work on and get those installed. LEDs for what?
Don't you have LED headlights that need to go in?
I'm waiting on them to get back with me still. So that'll be another eventual video for me. But yeah, what's difficult for me is, like I said, I got to be away from the house doing stuff and taking time to do that. And then with Kyle having his YouTube channel, you know, it's a lot of planning and organizing on who gets to take time away from doing stuff.
Yeah.
Delegating time,
you know, because we're in the same household, even though he's got a backdrop.
It is this nice. I had to go with this nice backdrop. I got a hell of a deal on this one. I'd have to say I did. I like it. No, I really wish that we had some kind of a shop to be able to work on stuff here. I take it for granted some of the times being so close to work. We do live very close to where we work, so it's not that far of a drive. However, even in the wintertime, going from here to work, it just sucks having to do that. You know, code in the gate, you got to get into the shop, everybody's got to, yeah.
Wah, I got a lot big, harder. Giant shot 2 miles away.
It's a lot harder than just walking out of the garage door into the garage.
Yeah, it is.
Otherwise, you know, if we had a shop attached to our house here, I would probably be in there till 1 a.m. almost every single day.
I've definitely had the nights like that since buying this house with a nice big garage in it. Probably. Except my heater's not working. I have a gas heater and it wasn't kicking on today. I had to use one of those little two-burner propane heaters.
That sucks. Whatever. Got a really good question come in from CP the Tool Addict. He says, I've been turning away trucks with DEF and exhaust elites. What's your take on the EPA regulations and how they're coming down on shops? It sucks. It sucks a lot. If you watch me, I've done a lot of videos in correspondence with Truckmaster over on his channel. If you haven't checked and seen those, we've done a lot of funny skits on how much we hate the EPA and all the crap they have been doing to pinch down onto the diesel market. If anybody doesn't know, the EPA now has started to crack down so much more onto even smaller diesel shops. The things between deleting, tuning, doing any kind of emissions regulation alterations has been severely bogged down on. Now, a lot of shops, they're even getting in trouble for looking at trucks that have altered EPA regulation systems. So if you bring a truck into your shop Say you bring in a 2010 Duramax into your shop. Bring it in, needs a valve cover gasket. Well, that valve cover gasket normally would pay like 5.5, 6 hours, something like that. People can actually get in trouble. That shop can get in trouble for doing that valve cover gasket on that truck, because normally you would have had to have taken off the EGR cooler to be able to do that one valve cover gasket. And you are required by law to not mess with vehicles that don't have the EPA regulation stuff already on them. And if it doesn't have it on there, then you're required to not work on the vehicle or replace it and put it back to full EPA emission standards. How BS is that one? Even if you didn't do the work, you didn't delete anything, customer comes in, say they want something done, you're not allowed to work on it.
So basically it's forcing these people to go to like mom and pop shops to get their stuff done.
It's made the whole diesel market and everything go extremely black market. And this stuff costs an arm and a leg. Yeah, it's bad. I'm telling you,
we just need to start the whole trend of Tesla swapping diesels.
I don't want no electric motor in my diesel, boy.
Leave the diesel, like we said, leave the diesel engine in it and just swap all the wheel motors out of a Tesla, and then you're good to go. You don't have to worry about it. No emissions.
Mm-hmm.
And they're so expensive too. Even the emission system things. If you have a vehicle that's less than 5 years old, when you're talking emission system fixing for a vehicle that's less than 5 years old, you are talking thousands and thousands and thousands of just to be able to work on these things. You have to have EPA mandated equipment that does regeneration and shows the statistics on it, then that can do full testing on it. You have to have specialty, I guess, equipment to be able to even get to some of the things. And then the cost on some of these diesel particulate filters, especially the SCR catalysts, they're thousands of dollars and they're just horrendous. Now, some of the diesel world right now is going to a more EPA friendly in the regulations of doing professional tuning or performance tuning that still meet the requirements of the U.S. government. But I think that one's going to fizzle and die out here really soon, too. Yeah, you can't really buy delete kits much of anymore at all. All these places, it is. You can't even put that stamp on it that said before for race application only. You can't even do that anymore. It sucks. It's bad. Now, I know McBake's like, yeah, whatever, you guys and your diesels.
A little bit.
Yeah, you know you are. But you got to ride in my Duramax for the first time this week. What was your opinion on it?
Yeah, that's cool.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Every other dealer's diesel that's ever come into the shop, he's like, dude, I don't get what you guys think of these diesels. Like, these things are so overrated. Diesel. Uh-huh. And then you rode in that one, and I'm pretty sure your words were, yeah, I drive that.
Yeah, I drive it.
There you go, Baker. You just need to get yourself a vet. Dude, I think you need to get that baby Duramax we got sitting on the lot. The
I do like Coloradans. I do like those. It's not so much the diesel, the big trucks. I've never understood the big trucks. That's just not my bag, man.
Dude, that Colorado would be such a good fit for you, though.
I do like the Colorado a lot.
I mean, you got the big burly bitches like us that's got the big trucks, and then you get the little bitty truck to go with it. He's thinking about it. Look at him. He's thinking about it.
If I'm going to spend that money, it's going to be on a little sports car with a six-speed.
Or a Tesla truck. Is it going to be that Tesla truck?
I'd love to have that Tesla truck. I sent you that picture of that Ken Block one that was slammed.
That is the best designed Tesla truck that I've seen on the market yet. I'm going to try to pull up the picture of it here just to be able to show it here.
Well, since we're talking about it, what are you guys' thoughts about the whole tug of war contest between the Tesla truck, the Cybertruck, and the?
Sick.
Ken Block Hoonigan version of the Tesla truck.
It's sad. Is it'll that never
not awesome?
Because Ford would never let it happen.
So what are your guys' thoughts between the tug of war between the Ford F-150 and the Tesla truck?
I thought it was hilarious that Ford decided to call them back out.
Yeah, they Ford knew it. Doesn't stand a chance.
No, but they knew it. If you look at the specs of the vehicles that were done in that pull, there was no way that the Ford could ever have even come close to doing it. When they tested this, when they did the pull, they had the mid-range Tesla with the dual motors, so it was four-wheel drive against a, yes, four-wheel drive F-150, but it was only in two-wheel drive. Baseline options with the smaller tires on top of that. So weight difference was very different. It was not in four-wheel drive, wasn't able to work correctly, and they still ran them together like that. So now Ford has taken that one and called them back out and said, hey, let's put together an actual matchup to it.
Have you seen this where they released their aerodynamic tests for the different trucks?
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was pretty interesting.
I mean, it makes – I mean, you look at that and it makes sense. I mean, the Cybertruck is a wedge, and your two trucks with even with, I mean, I'm sure those are without tonneau covers. They're going to have all kinds of air deflection that going into the bed and circling around and coming back out of the bed. So yeah, it's going to be different on the aerodynamics of the trucks between the Cybertruck and the regular trucks, because it's just, you know, the Cybertruck is up and then back down and it's it. I mean, it's all one solid piece. It's like a car version of a truck.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. And we put that out in the video. I mean, I personally don't think it's going to do so well, even though I'd like it to. McBeigh thinks that it's going to do fantastic.
Yeah,
I think they're going to do a redesign.
Not for the Cybertruck.
I bet they will.
Okay.
We'll see. Uh-huh.
Do we have another subject? I feel like at this point we're kicking the dead horse after it's already been beat.
He didn't like that dead Cybertruck subject.
It's just been talked about so much.
It has. It has. It's worse than Icon Tools or anything like that. We won't get into that one, though.
So, about them Icon Tools.
Yeah.
How many people picked up Icon Tools on Black Friday? Let's hear about it in the chat.
I didn't even see. Did Harbor Freight have any Black Friday deals?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure they did.
Yeah, they
well,
did.
Harbor Freight has Black Friday deals about any day that ends right. in Y. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely did. But those aren't tools that I will be doing reviews on anytime soon on my channel. I will leave that for everyone else to kind of skirmish over. Yeah. Don't need to do that one.
I have nothing against Harbor Freight.
Tools and Trash asks, what kind of tools do you need to work on the Tesla truck?
Less probably than what we have right now.
I'll say, I feel like there's a punchline in there somewhere. There's a joke right there somewhere. I feel like it's there, but I don't know what the punchline is.
All right. Well, we're running right on that hour line right now, guys, which is where we like to keep these things so we can put it into our nice, efficient little podcast format. So let's get the last words in. McBake, what kind of goodies you got coming up for your channel coming up in the next week or so?
I got another top five tools video coming up this week. Got that one all planned out. Going to be shooting that this week. I want to give you the title of it, but I don't want to ruin it. I don't know.
It's a great title. It's a good title. You'll want to see it. So if you have not subscribed over to McBeigh's channel, make sure that you guys definitely do that one. Yes, how about you, Captain Ron?
I've got a request to revisit a flat rate video. Somebody wanted an update to my flat rate video since I've been in it for about 6 months now. So I may do one of those. And I've got some other stuff I've kind of been rolling around in my head, but just haven't put pen to paper yet. So I will try to get a video out sometime this week. I know I say that every week, but I'll do my best to get one out this week.
Sweet. I know I'm going to have some pretty cool stuff coming up here in the next week or so. I've got one already recorded. We've got some more nifty tools. Everybody loves nifty tools. If you haven't checked out already, I did a Nifty Tools of best five Nifty Tools of 2019. Just posted that one the other day. And then obviously it's not the total end of 2019 because there's going to be more Nifty Tools coming along. So I've got one of those videos coming up this next week because I've been buying and I had to get some of them kind of pushed out. So I'm going to be doing that one. And then I'm wanting to do a video on the differences in butt connectors. I get a lot of questions on he said butt. Demonetized right there. No, we're going to be doing the differences in electrical connectors, differences in how well they work, how strong they actually hold and everything, differences in between all the different styles of connectors and or soldering the wires together. So make sure you guys keep track on that one.
Hey, Baker. You want to see Rust Belt get triggered? Watch this. Are you going to do it over Scotch locks?
No. No. We don't do Scotch locks.
I think that was the first thing he said to me. Like, day one, he was showing me around, and he's like, you see these electrical connectors? Don't use these ones. Only these.
I have given that warning to many technicians coming into the shop. I said, I can't throw these out because we paid money for them. I can't find anybody to spend money on them to take them off of our hands. So they are sitting there. I have already threatened the guy who restocks those things. If you put more of those into these bins and I see those on charged on a on an invoice, I will slash your tires. If anybody else comes in and I see those used on a car, you will get back flagged on that car. Guaranteed.
I'm gonna do a video over Scotch locks.
You should. Crappy. Well,
so wait. Before we go, I want to give one more shout out. So, for those of you guys in the chat who have not checked this guy out, you should probably go do it because he is now one YouTube year old, and that is Mr. Junk from Work.
Woo, woo.
All right.
Woo, Junk from Work. Junk from Work. Yay, 1 year anniversary.
Yep. Pretty awesome. It's great to see guys like that be able to grow. And that's why we have an amazing community here with the automotive, the tools, the technicians, being able to be on with each other every single week, seeing you guys being able to converse back and forth, enjoy each other's videos, take some recommendations, because not one single YouTuber on this community is the be all end all. Make sure that you take your due diligence and do your research on the different subjects that you are looking for. So make sure you go and check out everybody on here, because quite a few of them have their own YouTube channels. There's lots of content to be able to see right there.
Yeah, there is.
Yep. All right. On your way out, don't forget to hit that like button and subscribe to any of our three channels. On top of that one, we come out with great content all the time. I appreciate everybody tuning in tonight. Thank you. And as always,
you guys stay awesome.
You guys stay awesome.